You are listening to Think Theory Radio.
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 Radio. Radio. Radio.
Hello and welcome to Think Theory Radio. This is your host, Damian Perdue. And this is the show that gives you topics outside of the mainstream realm of thought and ideas to make you think. And I got another new board op today. Devin's in the house.
Hello, everyone.
We're doing musical chairs with board ops and producers the past 3 weeks, which is fine. I don't mind. It's cool to have different people in here. It's like having another guest.
Yeah, next week you're going to be board opping your own show.
All right. That'll be fun. Guess I'll be doing pre-recorded. Well, welcome to the show. I know it's your first time sitting behind the board for Think Theory. And I know you've been in the back working the Facebook Live and the phones, which is now Zoe's back there. What's up, Zoe? So if you're on Facebook, check us out. Go to the WCPT page, WCPT 820, and you can see us live on Facebook Live. And let us know what you think. Leave some comments. We'll try to get to them, but I usually get distracted and it doesn't happen. You can always give us a call, too, at 773-763-9278. That's 773-763-WCPT. You can also text us at that number, which is brought to you by GWC. And today, I want to take you on a little journey through space and time and metaphysics and ancient wisdom, archaeology, and fantastic realism. I want to take you down the path of my enlightenment and where I learned the things that I learned and how I got, basically, in other words, how did I get on the radio and start talking about all this crazy stuff? And Devin's looking at me like, okay, I'm ready. I'm waiting. This journey started back in 1832 when I was a young lad on the south side. All right. So it did begin when I was a little ute. I've always been kind of a metaphysical thinker and an artist, a dreamer. And I was lucky enough that I had great parents. Shout outs to my dad and mom, Gerald and Mary Jo. And they were very open with religion and stuff. They didn't force religion upon me and my brother. They were both raised Catholic, went to Catholic school and all that. But for me and my brother, they allowed us to figure out who we wanted to be spiritually and if we wanted to even go into any kind of religion, which gave me a lot of freedom to learn about all the religions and different spiritual ideas and concepts. And as a kid, I was always kind of fascinated by magic and not necessarily like the David Copperfield type magic, which, you know, that's cool too, but more so kind of the ancient wizards and warlock sorcerers. And I would always remember going into bookstores or whatever, you know, if I was, you know, tagging along with my parents, I'd always try to go find some real magic book, you know, something kind of more tangible and something with a more deeper base to it. And I remember once as a kid, one of my friends asked, probably, I don't know, 12 years old or something, and one of my friends asked me, well, what religion are you? And I said, I don't have a religion. I'm not. And he said, well, who do you believe in? What do you believe in? And kind of jokingly, I said, Merlin. Right? And, you know, of course, he's looking at me like, you're crazy. What are you talking about? That's magic. That's not religion. That's not God. And I was like, well, yeah, that's what I believe in. Blah, 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 blah. And fast forward many years later, I had a friend, or still have a friend, named Marty. And he introduced me to this book called The 21 Lessons of Merlin. And I'm trying to look up by Douglas Monroe. That's the guy's name. And Marty and myself share Irish heritage. And I've always been kind of interested in my background and where I come from and the folklore of Irish, of the Irish people. So this book was like, okay, this is pretty cool. The 21 Lessons of Merlin. It's basically, it's kind of allegories about him teaching a young King Arthur. And each one, each chapter is a lesson. So there's 21 chapters, 21 lessons. But it's more about ancient Druidic folklore and the stories of the history of the Druids. And there are a lot of like magical incantations in there. And each chapter that followed a lesson will show you the specific incantation that he was trying to impart on King Arthur. But a lot of the history in there was really interesting. And a lot of it's hard to find out because the Druids didn't really write things down. And there's not a lot of written history for the ancient Irish people. And even, you know, I'm talking about pre-Celtic, you know, the Celtics came later. There was actually the people there. One of the names they give to them is the Tuatha. And these were the people that were there when the Celtics came. So, but a lot of what you see in Celtic artistry comes from the original people there. So I read this book and I start to get into, reading about, you know, more about the Druids and where they come from and who they were. And they're very interesting. They're basically a priesthood that, you know, that's what Merlin was. Merlin was a Druid. And they were this ancient priesthood in Ireland, Scotland, England. They had a lot of power. They were very looked upon as, you know, sages and wise men. So they had a lot to do with how the kings, the ancient Celtic kings, were picked. And had a lot to do with negotiating peace between tribes and such and such. So fast forward again to about 2008. And some friends of mine were planning a trip out to Ireland for my friend's sister-in-law and my friend's sister. I know both of them. For her wedding. She was marrying an Irish guy. And one of these, you know, late nights, we're all together having some libations, getting a little tipsy. The bride-to-be, we were talking about the trip, and my friend was like, why don't you meet me somewhere in Europe while I'm out there? So I was like, cool, that sounds good. And she's like, well, just come to the wedding. Come to Ireland. And I'm like, okay, that sounds great. I always wanted to go to Ireland, and now I had, like, a real reason to go and somewhere to be. And which is kind of funny, though, because when I showed up at the wedding, she was like, wait, why are you here? She was totally cool with it. She was just kind of surprised. I was like, you don't remember? Oh, yeah, that's right. So as I'm planning this trip to Ireland, I wanted to look up, a historical place from my family, which is my Irish last name is Madden. So that's the clan that I come from. The Mad Dogs. And so I looked up to see if there were any castles there, Madden castles, which I did find one. And I also wanted to see some ancient ruins, which is another thing that was another blessing that my parents imparted on me was a love for ancient architecture and archaeology. When I was young, we would go out to Mexico and see the Mayan ruins. And so I always had this kind of interest and fascination with ancient culture and ancient ruins. So I found a tour that takes you to the Hill of Tara and Newgrange. And these are two of the oldest sites in Ireland and in the world. The Hill of Tara is a hill, an ancient ceremonial and burial site near Skyrn in County Meath, Ireland. According to tradition, it was the inauguration place and seat of the High Kings of Ireland. So there's actually this standing stone, which is called the Stone of Destiny. And it's kind of just a column with has kind of a sun-looking petroglyph around the bottom of it on the ground. And supposedly the ancient Celtic kings would touch it, and if it vibrated, that meant they were the chosen one. Now, of course, when I touched it, it vibrated so violently that, you know, I obviously was the new king of Ireland. But I wasn't recognized, you know, because I was American, I think. But anyway, that didn't happen anyway. But I did feel, now that the Hill of Tara is an amazing site, and they're still finding more because a lot of it's buried. And now with the laser technology and satellite imagery, they're finding a lot of structures underneath the ground there. And they believe that there's actually would have been one of the largest wood henges in the world, which would have circumnavigated the whole area. And it's huge, like a football field size wood henge, you know, it's like Stonehenge, but these wood pillars they would build, it was kind of common in ancient Ireland. And the energy there is amazing. Just a beautiful place. If you get a chance, go check it out. Then on the next stop of the tour, we go to Newgrange. And Newgrange is a prehistoric monument in County Meath, Ireland. It's an exceptionally grand passage tomb built during the Neolithic period, around 3200 BC, which some estimates also give it even to like 4000 BC. And it makes it older than Stonehenge and the Great Pyramids in Egypt. And it's a temple mound. It's really beautiful. It's a big structure. You walk inside, and there's a long passageway that goes down, and then it kind of tees out in a cross kind of form, and then there's a round room in the back where they would do different ceremonies. And it's built, just like a lot of ancient sites, are built in a way that have something to do with the solstice. And this one, I believe it's the winter solstice. So in the rising sun and the winter solstice, the first rays go through and it shines light directly on this spiral symbol. So I started noticing there's all these petroglyphs there with all these spiral symbols. And the spiral symbols there are kind of, they're double. They go kind of, you follow one and it goes out and it goes into another. And they're all over this place. And in the gift shop, I saw a cool little pendant that I'm wearing now. If you're on Facebook Live or YouTube later, you can see that I'm holding it up. Looks, oh, there we go. I know that makes great radio. It's showing things. But it's looks kind of like the Italian horn, which I also liked it too because I have some Italian blood as well. And it has the spiral symbol on it. So I was like, okay, this is pretty cool. I'm going to get this, you know, little keepsake. And a couple years later, I was planning a trip to Malta, which is a small island in the Mediterranean. Actually, I was planning a trip to Europe to go to these graffiti festivals in Germany and France. And I had about a four-day window in between the festivals. And I asked a friend, a former coworker, who is actually a Christian missionary who travels all around the world and he's currently living in Iraq. I asked him if he was going to be anywhere during that time. And he said, well, I'm actually going to be in Malta. And I was like, oh, wow, I've always wanted to go to Malta. It's this another, like, very ancient place, and there's a lot of history there and kind of mythos around it. You know, some people think that that's where it possibly could have been Atlantis and stuff like that. So I had this four-day window, and he actually wouldn't be there till my third day in. So I figured, cool, I have 2 days, sightsee, hang out, 2 days with him. So being the hip-hop graffiti writer that I am, I had to look up and see, is there anything hip-hop in Malta? Like, right? So I literally look up hip-hop in Malta, and I found a website that was called hiphopmalta.com. Thank God for the internet. And I contacted them. I said, hey, I'm going to be out there this time. Is there anything going on that I could get down with and perform or paint at? And they wrote me back. They said, yeah, actually, we're doing a benefit concert for an African refugee center there. And that if I could paint the backdrop for the stage. And I was like, wow, that sounds great. Sure, just buy the paint and I'll do it. So I'm emailing, which is now a good friend of mine named Dave Legacy, who's also a very talented rapper and MC and musician. And the first day there, he meets up with me and I actually go to his band practice, which was his band at the time was called No Bling Show. And it was a really cool live hip-hop band. They had singers, rappers, and a very good stage show and everything. So I listened to them practice, whatever. So I looked up all these. Of course, I had to check out some ancient ruins while I'm in Malta. And I found out that Malta has some of the oldest ancient ruins in the world. So, of course, I had to go visit these. So some of the ones I went to were Gigantija or Jantija. It's like two G's. Some of the words out there are a little tricky. The other one was Hagarkim, and I went to Tarshian. And when I went to visit these places, I noticed the similarities between them and Newgrange. The round structure, the way they were built, and also spiral petroglyphs. So I start seeing these spiral petroglyphs all over the place. And, wow, that's weird. I look up and I see, wow, these ruins were built around the same time as Newgrange, around estimated 3200 to 4000 BC, which some believe these are some of the oldest ruins in the world. And I even remarked to the security guard who was standing, I believe, at Tarshian. And I said, wow, I saw these very similar spiral structure petroglyphs in Newgrange in Ireland at a very old site as well. And I showed him my pendant. And he just, like, matter-of-factly just kind of, oh, yeah, well, they probably traveled and knew each other. And he's like, I believe the ancients were more advanced than we give them credit for and communicated with each other more than we think. And I was like, wow, that's very insightful from the security guard at this at this World Heritage site. So I went to Hagarkim. So I painted this mural. It was really cool. I painted this mural at this African refugee center. But I couldn't find my friend, the one I was supposed to meet up with. It was crazy. And I'm trying to, you know, email him, text him, whatever. I'm not hearing from him. It's my last day there. This is the same day as the concert. And I go to see some more ruins. I go to Hagarkim, which is a beautiful site. It's right on, it's not on the water, but it's kind of next to the water. So you see the Mediterranean just outside of it. And as I was there, I went in, I kind of snuck behind some ropes and went in one of the rooms of the site just to do some meditation. And as I was in there, my phone starts going crazy, and it's like I'm getting a call from some number with just all eights. It was just 8888888888, like a million eights, which I thought was kind of freaky because eight is like the infinity symbol. And eight also has like a lot of spiritual meaning. So I'm like, whoa, I'm in the middle of these ancient ruins meditating, and here I'm getting some call from some infinity number, right? And it turns out it was my friend trying to contact me through Skype. But it wouldn't answer or something like that. So he leaves a message. He says his flight got delayed. He just got in and something was wrong with his phone. It wasn't working out there. But I had no way to contact. I couldn't message back, right? Because it was just some weird number. And I didn't have the time. I didn't have Skype on my phone or anything like that. And I was pretty busy. It was basically I was at these ruins. Then I was going to the concert because I was actually doing a mini documentary on the concert. Which there was a company at the time, a website that paid for my trip to go out there. And so I was, you know, so I had to get to the concert, film this, document this, you know, it was documenting me painting the mural and everything like that. And I get to the concert area and I'm walking around. And next thing you know, I hear my name being yelled out and I look over and it's my friend from Chicago standing there and he's preaching to some African guys. And he's like, man, what are you doing here? And I'm like, well, this is the concert I told you about. And he's like, oh, this is so crazy. He's like, my friend just brought me here, said this is a good place to come to and, you know, try to convert people, whatever, which I'm not really down with. But, you know, to each his own. And he ended up, the place he was staying at was just down the block. So it was cool. So I ended up, you know, it's one of those weird cosmic kismet things that happened. Because it was the only time I would have been able to chill with him before I left. And he was the reason that I went to Malta, right? So that was pretty freaking itself. So after that trip, I really started to research about spirals and what it all means. And being that we have to take a break, when we come back, I'm going to get into the spiral matrix. So give us a call, 773-763-9278. That's 773-763-WCPT. Let me know if you have any questions or if you have stories to share of your path to enlightenment. We'll be back with more Think Theory Radio.
This is WCPT 820, where facts matter.
Welcome back to Think Theory Radio. This is Damian Perdue. And today I am taking you on a journey through the spiral matrix into the center of the universe and beyond. And Devin's here.
Hello again.
Probably, you know, getting slightly freaked out by my story here. Hopefully not too much.
I didn't want to sleep tonight. It's okay.
Okay, cool. That's good. And if you have any questions to ask me about my story thus far, give us a call at 773-763-9278. That's 773-763-WCPT. And you can also text us at that number as well. So before the break, I was talking about the beginning of my path to where I am now and how through several trips overseas to some ancient ruins, I saw these correlations between two places in Ireland and in Malta and the spiral symbol. So, of course, when I got back, I started looking up, just started researching, you know, why is the spiral symbol in both places? And of course, like everything in life nowadays, there's a million websites that you can find on almost any topic. And there are people way smarter than me that have already thought about these correlations and have written many books and articles and blogs about it. So you can find a lot of information about the commonality between different cultures and the spiral symbol. And I came to find out that this spiral symbol is used in almost every ancient culture in the world. And there are petroglyphs and hieroglyphs all over the world with a spiral symbol. And it's not just, you know, some people say, well, it's just a basic, you know, pattern, right? Spiral. But in every culture, that spiral symbol has a very deeper meaning, very important and sacred context to it. A lot of it has to do with a kind of path to the other world or some kind of spiritual enlightenment. And as I was digging, I started finding out, you know, how many different cultures have the spiral and what the spiral means. And so I found, you know, some really good information on a site by a man named Gary A. David. And he has collected a lot of information about spiral patterns and what it means. And according to author Annie Bellora, the spiral is manifested in the upper and middle worlds in a direction opposite to that of the underworld. The right hand, diocele, or clockwise motion in Celtic belief represents the emerging, growing, material manifestation of energy. This is the direction in which one would cast the circle of protection and send energy into the environment. It is also used to banish unwanted energies. The left hand, widdershin, or counterclockwise motion, represents the inward turn and to draw energy into material manifestation. It is the principle of grounding energy. And Robert Graves talked about the designation for the megalithic site of Newgrange, which is the one that I was talking about earlier in Ireland, as the spiral castle. In front of the doorway at Newgrange, there is a broad slab carved with spirals, which forms part of the Stonehenge. The spirals are double ones. Follow the lines with your finger from the outside to inside, and when you reach the center, there is the head of another spiral coiled in the reverse direction to take you out of the maze again. So the pattern typifies death and rebirth. John Frayne, an artisan of Celtic jewelry, states that the spiral of opposing directions refers to solstice suns, A loosely wound anti-clockwise spiral represented the larger summer sun. A tightly wound clockwise spiral represented their shrinking winter sun. Now, in Hopi culture, in Native Americans, it's also a very sacred symbol, and it's used in many different ways for either sometimes they mark it to show where there's water. Sometimes it's used as an actual symbol of warning or a symbol of this is a place with high energy. And the spirals woven into the plaques made by Hopi women, primarily those of the Second Mesa, symbolize the path we take in life's journey and the adversities we face along the way. And they also believe that every generation, they're following the spiral pattern into the great source. And if you look at in nature, how much a spiral is there, and from everything from our DNA, the double helix, to the Milky Way galaxy, which is a barred spiral, and every other galaxy, you see these spiral formations. So as I'm learning more about this, I'm like, wow, this is really interesting how this correlates and relates to each other in all these different forms and how these ancient people had such a high belief in this spiral pattern. And this brought me into the world of mathematics and physics, which as a kid, if you would have told me I'd be getting into that, I would not have believed you. I wasn't the best student in the world, let's say that. Although, my teachers always said I had potential, and if I would have just applied myself, as they always say, I would have had much better grades. But, I passed. I did what I had to do. And geometry was the one that I liked, which is interesting. Didn't like algebra or trig or any of that, but geometry I was really good at, got A's in, and I just figured it was probably because it's more of an artistic mathematics, it's like shapes and patterns and everything. And that was in high school. So it's weird that years later I would get into geometry, into sacred geometry. And for those that don't know, sacred geometry is a belief that a lot of ancient structures were built with a certain geometrical principle in mind and has a connection to the creator or to our past or whatever, the universe, whatever you believe it to be. And then I found out about the golden mean spiral. And the golden mean spiral is created in nature according to what is called the golden mean, golden section, or divine proportion, which is simply the ratio of 1 to 1.6180339. It is derived from the Fibonacci series, or the Fibonacci sequence. It's a numerical list whereby each number is the sum of the previous two numbers, 0, 1, and 1, 2. 1 plus 2 is 3, 3 plus 2 is 5, 3, and so on. Regardless of how large the spiral becomes, the ratio of its dimensions remains constant. For instance, the proportion AB to AC is the same as BC to BD or CD to CE. The golden mean can also be applied geometrically to form the golden rectangle, the sides of which contain the pi ratio, the dimensions of the fabled arc. The Ark of the Covenant is known to have conformed to the golden mean proportions. And as I'm getting into that, I start to get into physics and quantum physics, which, like I said, I never would have thought I'd be reading books about physics or quantum physics. And believe me, I'm not, and I've said this many times on the show, I'm not a mathematician, I'm not a scientist, I'm more of an artist musician, but I've always been fascinated by science and math. And so there's a lot of books out there that are written for the lay person about physics. And one good one that I read is by Dave Goldberg. It's called The Universe in the Rearview Mirror. And it's very well written. It's kind of funny. It's like he throws in a little sci-fi stuff. He talks about Star Trek and stuff. And he talks about, just different little kind of jokes. And it's just a very easy read if you don't really fully understand physics, like a lot of people do, or don't, I should say. And I started getting into quantum physics and how quantum physics parallels a lot of the ancient wisdom, and how through quantum physics we realize that everything is energy and everything is connected. And there is no kind of the physical forms we see is just all perception based upon the way our bodies are formed, the way our atoms are put together, and the way our eyes are utilized, and our ears and touch, smell, and sight. But everything in itself is actually pure energy. And this is what a lot of the ancients talked about, how everything is movement and everything is connected. And quantum entanglement, which is the theory that if particles interact with each other, once they're separated, no matter the distance between time and space, they're going to react in opposing manners. Whether one flips upside down, the other one's going to flip the other way, they'll retain some kind of connection. So the theory goes, and they've proven this over and over. There have actually been more current experiments that have done quantum entanglement at the farthest distances so far. There was actually one this year in, I believe it was China. I believe it was Chinese and German scientists, I think, they did the experiment. But they were able to do quantum entanglement from Earth to a satellite. And that's the farthest distance that's ever been recorded as far as a quantum entanglement experiment. So here's this theory of quantum entanglement, that everything is connected, right? You know, just through basic quantum physics. And this is another theory that the ancients promoted, that all things are connected, all things are one. We are all part of a larger being or entity or whatever you wanted to believe. And it's interesting that at this time you have science, current science, that is also kind of forming these beliefs and changing what we used to think. I mean, wasn't the case just 100 years ago, even less than 100 years ago. They thought that atoms were solid. And now we know that that's not the case. And we keep learning more and more, and it keeps proving more and more the connections between what the ancients knew and what we're learning now. And there's tons of books, like I said, there's a lot of people smarter than me that have thought about this stuff and written great books, and a lot of them are theoretical physicists, and others are just dreamers like me. But some great books that I wanted to give out recommendations for, if you're interested in these kind of subjects, is one is called The Tao of Physics, or The Tao of Physics, by Frigyat Capra. The other one is The Science of the Dogon, Decoding the African Mystery Tradition, by Laird Scranton. And that one's pretty cool. It's about the Dogon tribe in Africa and about their creation myths. And he parallels them with quantum physics and the Big Bang and string theory. And it's really interesting the way they correlate. Another one is The Akashic Field Theory by Irvin Laszlo, which is another one where he talks about the similarities between Hinduism and the concept of the Akashic, or the Brahman, and the energy that permeates throughout the universe, and how everything comes from this energetic field. And he was trying to relate it into kind of a theory of everything, where it would be that this Akashic field is this ancient wave field that exists throughout the universe that we all kind of come from or connect through. And he parallels it a lot with different Hindu and Buddhism, which is similar to the Tao of Physics. So I want to know what you guys think. And I see we had some calls. So let's get to Ed on the north side. What's going on, Ed?
Yeah, Damien?
Yes.
Yeah, I wonder if you heard this story. You were talking about quantum mechanics, and right away it came into my mind, Albert Einstein.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a famous story, I'll bet you probably heard it, where he's arguing with this Danish physicist, Niels Bohr.
Mm-hmm.
And Niels Bohr trying to tell him, Einstein, you generally don't tell Einstein he's wrong, but he's telling Einstein, your theory does not explain quantum mechanics.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot make a prediction with your theory. And Einstein's arguing with him and says, yeah, I'll tell you how to do it. Move this over here. And Niels Bohr said, no, your own theorem says you can't move something without changing its size. And then he says, all right, let's imagine you can move it. And Niels Bohr said, no, because if you imagine you can move it, you have to figure out where it's going to go. And in effect, you're moving it no matter what you do. And finally, Einstein got tired of arguing with him. And he said, God would not play dice with the universe. And mm-hmm. Niels Bohr said to him, how do you know what God would do? Had you heard that story?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah. And that's... he had another quote. Albert Einstein didn't really like quantum mechanics a whole lot.
Yeah.
And he used to call quantum mechanics, he said, spooky action at a distance.
Mm-hmm.
And he was kind of terrified by it because it wasn't something totally quantifiable.
Right, exactly. Everything was probabilistic, and Einstein couldn't deal with that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anyway, nice talking to you, Damien.
Hey, thanks for the call, Ed. Yeah, exactly, and it's pretty interesting. Albert Einstein and, like you said, Bohr's and all these, and Schrodinger's cat, which is the whole thing about if you put a cat in the box, and if you kill it or something, I forget exactly, but basically you don't know if it's alive or dead until you observe it, and that's the whole thing about quantum mechanics and quantum physics and all these particle accelerators is that the observer is a key part of the experiment. So without the observer, it wouldn't happen. So it's like the entanglement, like I was speaking of, it has to do also with the observer. And that's why they've come to determine that a particle can be both a particle and a wave. And they've done this through these slit-slot experiments where they send particle beams through these slits in a metal wall. And in theory, they're supposed to arrive in a certain pattern, but it changes depending on the observer. So it's like if they're not observing it, it comes out a particle, or they observe it and it comes out a wave. And it's just this weird thing where it's almost as if the particles transcend through space and time. It's almost like they're time traveling, or they're communicating to themselves through time of what they will be in the other side, right? And this is this also goes into a lot of what the ancients believed, how everything is an illusion and everything is this veil of illusion, and we're not actually living in this material world. Is all kind of it's not reality. It's just here for us now, but this is not the true reality, and that the true reality is the energy that permeates throughout the universe and your connection to the source or the singularity. And that's the thing too about if you believe in the theory, the Big Bang theory, that everything in the universe comes from this one minute singularity, which is amazing in itself because it's almost defies its own laws of physics in a way, because it's how can all of energy have been consisted in a smaller packet than it does now. So if you believe in the quantum entanglement and that if all particles interact or particles interact with each other, they will react again, no matter the distance between time and space. And if all energy in the universe has always existed since the Big Bang, that means that we are still connected to the very beginning and connected to everything else within the universe. And if you think about how life was formed on Earth, the carbon that's come here, it's not directly from Earth. It comes from, asteroids and planets and the way everything was formed in the universe. So we're connected to all these dead stars. So that's like a Carl Sagan quote, that we're stardust, right? We're connected to the beginning. We are part of the universe in a much larger sense. So speaking of connecting, we're going to connect to some commercials right now. And we'll be back with a little bit with more Think Theory Radio right here on WCPT 820.
Hey, Google, play WCPT.
Streaming Chicago's Progressive Talk from TuneIn.
Welcome back to Think Theory Radio. This is Damien. And if you've been listening to the whole show, I've been taking you on a journey through the outer reaches of the universe, through sight and sound. I think that's the Twilight Zone. But my show is kind of like the Twilight Zone. It's kind of like a real version. I've had a lot of Twilight Zone episode-y kind of things happen in my life. And if you're just tuning in, what I've been talking about is the situations and experiences in my life that have brought me to the point of doing a show called Think Theory Radio and talking about quantum physics and how it relates to Eastern wisdom and the universe and graffiti art. Oh, you didn't think I was going to throw that one in there, did you, Devin? So that's another correlation, right, of the spiral connection. When I used to, my early days of doing graffiti art, I would do a lot of spiral patterns in my artwork before I knew about all this spiral stuff. And when I did find out about them, wow, that's really interesting that I just kind of subconsciously or unconsciously painted a lot of spirals in my work. And the thing about graffiti art, too, is especially kind of the era that I come from. See, there is a very geometrical structure to graffiti and graffiti art. And in my day, you know, it's changed a little bit now, you know, street art's out and people like the kind of photorealistic looking and optical illusion graffiti, you know, more portraits and more kind of just crazy, you know, make the wall look like it's bending and stuff like that, which is great. And I know some guys that do that and they're insanely talented. But I come from the era where graffiti was letters, you know, it was about letters and it was about creating a wild style, which the wild style is a very, it's just a kind of a very intricate font that is hard to decipher unless you really know what you're reading. And it has very similar attributes to ancient hieroglyphics and the illuminated manuscripts that the Celtic scribes would do. When I was in Ireland, I went to the Trinity College and the library at Trinity College. If you ever get a chance to go out to Ireland, go to the library at Trinity College. It's amazing. It's one of those, looks like some kind of, you know, thing from Harry Potter or something. It's just these like insane levels upon levels of books in this old Gothic building. And they have the Book of Kells, which is an ancient book written by the scribes of St. Patrick. And one of the things that they would do, they retranscribed a lot of the ancient texts, but they would add their own ornamentation to it. And they would bend the letters around and they would add these little animals and humanistic figures attaching themselves to the letters, and the letters would bend and curve like the Celtic knotwork patterns. And it's very similar to what we did with graffiti. And that's what kind of drew me in as well and see this connection between, okay, here's something I'm doing in modern times with modern technology that comes from the ancients. And hip-hop itself, I was thinking about, you know, one of these shows I'm going to do, I'll get more into it, maybe I'll bring on some guests or something and talk about the kind of the ancient connection between hip-hop and our modern times. And just briefly, I'll say it like this. I perceive hip-hop as kind of our ancient bloodline speaking out to us through modern technology. And if you look at each element of hip-hop, if you don't know too much about it, there's typically four elements. Some say five, but we'll stick with the four, which is graffiti art, rap, DJing, and breakdancing. Now, these forms existed in all tribal societies, and it comes especially from ancient Africa. You had the griots, who were like the rappers. They were the oral history, you know, history makers and the writers of the myths, but they were poets. You had the tribal dances. They would be around a circle, around a fire. And this is similar to the breakdancing circle. The DJs are like the drummers, the ancient drums. And the graffiti art, of course, like I just said, is the ancient hieroglyphics. And what's also interesting is that hip-hop is all kind of done through modern technology. In graffiti art, we use spray paint. which is actually an atomizer. Talking about physics, breaking down atoms, and recreating. It's almost like alchemy. And rap and DJing, you're using microphones and you're using turntables and you're using beat machines. You're using modern technology to recreate what the ancients were doing with drums and just their bodies. And breakdancing is probably the less technological version of the elements, but at the same time, you're using, you know, modern gym shoes, you're using, you know, linoleum floor, you're using kind of mixing up modern dance, gymnastics, and everything into the form that is today, breakdancing or b-boying, some people call it. So as my path, you know, continues on, because I'm not reaching the end, I don't think. And I don't think there is an end. That's kind of one thing that I think about when you're searching for wisdom and truth, whether it's science or mysticism or spirituality. I don't think there is really an end. I think it's just constantly opening up. It's like fractal patterns. There's people that believe also that the universe is a large fractal, and a fractal is basically a pattern that looks the same whether you zoom in or zoom out. You know, there's a lot of things in nature where if you see those pictures where what is this? And then you zoom out and it's like a pineapple or something, but the more you zoom in, it just keeps looking like the same patterns. And I think that that's kind of similar to what is wisdom and knowledge. It's like with quantum physics, they keep trying to break it down and, you know, you go from the atom to the particle to the quark. And then it was the Higgs boson, which everyone thought, you know, they called it the God particle because it would, when they eventually found it several years back, they believed that it gives mass to everything in the universe. But when they found it or discovered it, they think that there's something beyond that. They thought that was going to be it. You know, this will be the key. This is what gives us mass to everything. Oh, they found that. So there's probably something beyond that. So I think just like the spiral, it's like a never-ending spiral upward that is constantly going. It's like the steps in Dante's Inferno. It's like you keep going and going up and looking for truth, or going down and going within. You just keep getting more questions and more levels. And that is the story of the spiral. There is much more. So I probably have to do another show on this because, you know, I only get an hour. So if, you know, if you want me to have more time, you should write to my bosses here at the station, WCPT 820 AM, and let them know that an hour is not enough for Think Theory Radio. And or not. But also, if you want to check out previous episodes of Think Theory Radio, go to SoundCloud or iTunes and just search Think Theory Radio, or you can go to the WCPT 820 page on SoundCloud, which SoundCloud's a free app. You can download it. And I would say it's better if you actually go to SoundCloud, because on SoundCloud, I was able to structure a playlist which has all of the Think Theory Radios in one place, where iTunes is kind of sporadic and spread out. So you can go there, go to SoundCloud, and later on the video will be up on YouTube. And remember, you can listen every week right here on WCPT 820, every Saturday night from 6 to 7 p.m., Think Theory Radio. And I want to thank for the calls, and thanks to Devin, and thanks to Zoe, and I'll see you next week right here on WCPT 820.